If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things, like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We really and the prosecution is spelling this out 10 times better than Lally did in round one. He is painting an emotional picture, and he's painting, I think, a familial picture for most of the jurors in this part of the country, where people go out, it's cold, they drink. I'm from Wisconsin. It's what they do. It is part of the culture there, and it's part of the culture here, clearly. And this is just normal life. And he's talking about, yeah, you know, you go out with your friends. It's somebody's birthday. The family, the friends get together. That reminds me of my childhood. People, this is completely familial to me. And I think, okay, I can totally see all of this happening. We see the waterfall. There's nothing that happened there. There's no fights. Everybody's in a good mood. Everybody is even texting when they eventually do leave the Alberts house about what a good time they had that night. There's even compliments about Karen in some of those texts. So nobody's like, nudge, nudge, what a good time. Karen's great, isn't she? She's going to go down, that bitch. Like, none of that is happening from these people the night of the actual event. And then we get to the morning. We get to the phone calls from Karen to Carrie and to Jennifer McCabe. Let's start with by listening to the information that Carrie Roberts has portrayed to the jury with her testimony. We'll talk on the other side.
Karen pointed out and said, look, my taillight. And I said, she said, do you think I hit him? And I said, no, I don't think you hit him. What are you talking about? Let's just go find him. But the taillight itself, the piece was missing. And as you got closer, there's a metal sort of square, and one of the pieces was sort of sticking out. And I only remember it because I thought if someone walks by that, they're going to catch their jacket on it.
How long of a time did you have to actually look at the taillight?
Under a minute.
How close were you to the taillight when you looked at it?
I was in front of it. I could see.
And when you talked about the taillight, you said a piece was missing. Is this the left side or the right side of the Lexus that you saw the piece of the taillight missing?
It was the right side, so it was the passenger taillight.
May I approach?
Yes.
She's pretty knowledgeable here on what she was seeing.
Should I remain, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you. Do you recognize what is in that photo?
That is Karen's SUV.
Is it similar or a fair and accurate depiction of how you saw the vehicle that morning?
Without the snow, I can't be positive, but this square piece was missing, as is in this picture.
The photograph you look at is not the car in the snow in the driveway the day you saw it.
Correct.
Putting that aside, is that a fair and accurate depiction of the damage that you saw to the right rear taillight of Ms. Reed's car that morning?
Yes.
And I think it's important to note, all of this is happening before they find John in the snow. So before anyone knows, and as Carrie even said, why would you think you hit him? You know, like, why were we, it's not even running through her mind that that's an option. She's thinking, you know, he's probably in someone's couch, whatever, but not going to, he's dead in the snow. Even when Karen brings up the taillight, that's still not in anyone's mind other than Karen. She says it a lot before they actually get to the scene where they find John O'Keefe. This, I think, is another quick piece, and then I want to get your reaction from Carrie Roberts talking about that initial phone call that came from
when she first called,
Karen.
She said, John's dead. Carrie, and hung up.
And she called you back?
She called back.
When she called back, was there any other party on the line other than you and her?
No.
What do you remember the second time that she called you?
Yes. She said, John I think he got hit by a plow. He did not come home last night. He would never not have come home. I wasn't supposed to stay in Canton. And Kaylee was here. He would never leave Kaylee by herself.
Did anybody ever ask you to lie?
No.
Or exaggerate?
No.
Would you?
Say that?
Would you?
No.
Sustained.
You were asked whether or not you told people on January 29th about the missing pieces to the defendant's taillight. And you began to say you didn't tell anybody that morning.
I didn't think it had anything to do with John. I didn't want to point fingers at anybody.
Why not?
Because I had no idea what had happened to him. I wasn't going to point fingers at his girlfriend.
Was it, in fact, broken with missing pieces that morning?
Yes.
Feeling like a pretty credible witness there. So initially, I think a plow hit him. Okay. We don't know that Karen later says, I saw him go into the house, but she's thinking a plow hit him at this moment in time. This is going to be some mountains to climb for that defense. What's your thoughts here?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, you look at how Carrie, the witness, presents, like you said, incredible. She doesn't look like she's lying or searching for fabricated information. It's like she's just giving the answers to the best of her recollection. And on top of that, what she talks about is the idea that John got hit by something. That originates with Karen. And it originates when she says, I think he got hit by a plow. And then at another time, she says something like, you know, could I have hit him or did I hit him or something to that effect. Coming from Karen, that shows a consciousness of guilt. There could have been a million things that happened to this guy, but the fact that Karen's mind and her mouth goes immediately towards John O'Keefe getting hit by something shows a consciousness of guilt, according to prosecution.
I mean, that's sure what it looks like, because we go from it's a plow to I left him at the waterfall and we had an argument. Two things that... we know one's not true. She didn't leave him at the waterfall, and there was no fighting at the waterfall, so we know that's not true. Could there have been fighting in the car? Sure. But it certainly didn't happen at the waterfall when everybody left together. And then obviously she ends up saying that she saw him go in the house and everything was good. Let's go back to the plow and all of this, because it does seem to show a consciousness of guilt. She's immediately that morning saying, according to the witnesses, I think I hit him. I hit him. Every variation of it. Before they find John O'Keefe, and she's going to also the snowplow. So there's this thought that somehow he is still outside, that he never got into the house. Okay, that doesn't make any sense, though. If she says she saw him get into the house, why would you be worried that you hit him or a snowplow hit him if you saw him walk into the house and never came out, as Karen's story is right now? How are they going to argue this?
You know, it's a really important point, and I think it's in part a function of, like you said, just how well the prosecution is putting on their case this second time around. They're prepared for the defenses. They know what defense is going to say. And so they've done a good job at sort of preempting that and showing how, hey, what defense is arguing couldn't possibly have happened based on Karen Reed's statements at the scene, based on the witness's observation of the taillight. That undermines the defense's conspiracy theory that, you know, some rogue officer was messing with the taillight at some later time. And that's why it looks like the vehicle hit John O'Keefe. No, it looks like, sounds like the taillight was damaged from the very outset of this whole thing.
Would the jury buy, okay, taillight, she's just putting the pieces together. She's confused. She was drunk too at that moment in time. And she sees that her taillight is broken and she doesn't know where John is. So that must be the logical conclusion that, and that's just all theoretical. She's just saying that over and over because she's scared. She's afraid that this is what happened to John. It's not because it's what she saw happen to John. She's just putting pieces together and her mind is kind of foggy. So she's just in fear. Will a jury believe that? Because they're also going to see that she was arguing the night before and saying, I think you're sleeping with another woman. So why isn't Karen's reaction in the morning, he didn't come home because he's in some other woman's bed or at someone else's couch? Or if he got into the party, why wouldn't she be thinking he's just passed out there because he's not answering his phone? You go to he's dead in the street. That's quite a jump.
It is significant points, Tony. You know, I think, like you said, defense is going to argue that, hey, this was chaotic. Karen was under so much emotional distress. She's trying her best to convey, you know, the information she has and how it could piece together in some fashion. And on top of that, she had to have a mental health examination shortly after this. She was really in shambles emotionally, and she's just trying her best to, you know, make suggestions as to, you know, connect dots and that kind of thing. But the dots she is connecting, according to the prosecution, kind of prove her guilt and establish the story that she hit John O'Keefe with her vehicle. And so, you know, of all the things she could have said and tried to piece together, why did she pick the one that goes directly to her guilt?
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.